Hello there, this is Kevin Patton, and this is a special online version of a presentation given on campus called Testing as Teaching. You may wonder why my name is presented in Japanese characters as well as Roman letters, and the reason for that is because a version of this presentation was originally given in Japan. In 2004, I was invited to speak to a group of anatomy educators in Kyoto, and so many of my examples are going to be related to the anatomy applications, but you'll be able to see how to apply this to your own discipline, I'm sure. Another thing I want to mention before we move along, and that is if you're not familiar with this type of online presentation, you may want to know that you can expand the screen at any time. That is, maximize the window so you can view it better. Over on the left, there is an outline, and you can click on any of the topics or the slides within those topics so you can skip ahead or go backward and so on. And there are also navigation buttons along the bottom of the screen. I don't think any of us needs a list of citations of studies that show that completing a test or quiz is in itself a learning process. I think we all know that students get practice in organizing their thoughts and analyzing and making practical applications and so on when they complete a test or a quiz. So let's just move on from that concept and look at how to do that. What I'm going to be talking about here is a process that I tried, and I first began this a few years ago and have used it a number of years, and of course refined it a little bit along the way, and it involves online testing as a process of learning. And so we have pre-programmed test tools available to us, for example, WebCT, which I think we're all familiar with, at least at some level. Respondus is another program that some of us have been using on campus for quite a while, and we do have a site license for this. So this is easily available, and the IT department can load that onto your individual computer or the computer that you ordinarily use for constructing tests. And of course, some of us are familiar with using Blackboard, and you may know that Blackboard bought out WebCT, and so starting now, it's officially known as a version of Blackboard. Now, online testing offers some features that written tests do not offer. For example, it's an automatic test-taking process. You don't have to be there with the student in order for the student to be able to take the test or quiz. No one needs to be there with them. It's easily accessible from a variety of locations around the world, and it is accessible at many different times of the day and days of the week. Online testing allows you also to include images and various media, including animations and sound files and so on, that would be very difficult to incorporate into a traditional in-class written test. Another advantage of online testing is that the students get immediate feedback, or at least potentially they can, depending on how you program it. So they immediately know how well they've done, and if you want, you can tell them which items they got wrong, and you can even program it to show what the correct item is, or give some hints as to how to solve it next time, or how to prepare in the future, or explain, you know, why the answer is what it is. Online testing is also very flexible. There's a lot of different programming settings that you have available within WebCT, and I will be calling it WebCT just because I think that's the term that we're most used to at this point. And WebCT does have a lot of flexibility in terms of the way each test is presented, and we'll be exploring some of those ideas a little bit later on. And one of the other advantages of online testing is that multiple repetitions are available. In other words, you can set it up so the students can take a test over and over again and thus practice with the problem-solving skills and practicing with the concepts that you're testing for on that particular test. When I first presented this information in Japan, I wanted to give a little background as to the course it was coming from, the school it was coming from. So the data that I'll be presenting a little bit later on, I want to identify for you as well, comes from my anatomy and physiology course. And the students there are all undergraduates, obviously, although a few of them are returning graduate students. And they're all preparing for health-related careers, or at least the vast majority of them are. Some of them actually are already in programs such as the nursing program or health information program. Now, I'll be comparing two different styles of presenting this course in terms of how I do tests. The old way involved entirely paper in-class tests. There were six written tests altogether, and I did use some illustrations and photographs, but that was very limited because of our limited ability to reproduce those accurately, especially with medical images and things like that that just do not photocopy very well. The new way, which is what I'm going to be focusing on here, now includes both online and paper tests. I have, instead of six written tests, nine online tests. In addition to that, I have two online practice exams, and then there are two written exams that occur in class, a midterm exam and a final exam. And because I'm able to use those online tests, I now have all kinds of images, including color images and animated images and images with sound that are available to me. Now, there are several steps to producing the kinds of online tests that I produce for my students, and they're highlighted here by these three bullet points. And there is a lot of information there. Let's take them one at a time. Beginning with the first bullet point there, I do prepare my images ahead of time that I'll be using in my online test. A few of those images I construct myself in Photoshop, but of course you can use any image editing or photo editing program that you would like, and several are available here on campus. And then I save those edited images as JPEG files, although a number of different file types can be used in this process. Now, where do I get those images? Some images are available from your textbook, and most publishers either have already given permission for that kind of use, or the representative can easily arrange for that kind of permission, you know, as long as you've adopted the book, of course. Another set of resources where you can get images might be images that are already being provided in a digital format by your textbook publisher, or a publisher of some other resource you use in your course. You can also purchase image collections, and I believe the college has several image collections in several different fields that have already been purchased and are available, and I'm sure the staff in the library can help you with that, as well as the instructional media staff and so on. And then there are a number of online resources in my discipline. I know many of the government agencies that cover human biology, as well as the various professional societies, have banks of resources that have been collected for this very purpose. And so I would encourage you to explore those. And again, our library staff can help you find where those resources are. Another source of images would be images that you collect yourself, either photographs that you take yourself, other pieces of art or imagery that you create yourself. There are also medical images that you might acquire either from your own self or family, or I let students donate theirs. Of course, I have them sign a release that permits me to use them for that purpose. These medical images in the lower right-hand corner, by the way, are from my own family. The sonogram you see there is my youngest son, Luke, before he was born. And what looks like a petunia down there at the bottom is actually the inside of my own esophagus before I got my most recent prescription that helps avoid all of those red burn marks that you see highlighted by the arrows drawn in by my gastroenterologist there. That's what teaching anatomy and physiology can do to you, by the way, and I imagine some of the effects are produced by WebCT itself. Now, once I get those images, I sometimes edit them. And the reason I edit them is so that I can add arrows or letters or cover up labels or add additional labels or, draw little icons here or there just to make that image more usable for the particular test item that I want to use it for. Of course, you can get really fancy with this and take images such as this copyright-free image that's available from a very old edition of Grey's Anatomy and go ahead in there and highlight a certain organ or a certain part of an organ so that it can be used for testing. And of course, there are various ways that you might want to edit things for your own discipline in order to make an image into a more useful test item. Another really cool thing about using online tests is that you can incorporate animations like this one here that's available from Merck's website. Many companies even do provide some of these images and will give permission for to use them within tests or other educational purposes. And by the way, when you ask for permission, it's always a good idea to emphasize that it will be used within a password protected site, that you're not going to be publishing these things just for general use throughout the world, and sometimes that makes it a little bit easier for them to give you permission to use them. And of course, the cool thing about animations is that it gives you yet another way that you can present information for students to process during the testing act. So moving along here, after we have all of our images ready to go that we're going to be using for our online test, what I do then is create the test itself inside a program called Respondus. This is a standalone program that works with WebCT but is not a part of WebCT. It's produced by a third-party publisher, and as I mentioned earlier, it is available for us here on campus. And once you're finished creating the test in Respondus, you just press a button or two and it automatically uploads into whatever course you specify in WebCT. So here's a screenshot of Respondus, and we're looking at the creation of one multiple choice item here. And you'll notice along the top, and along the top there, you type in the title of your question, although it does have a feature to automatically create a title if you like, based on previous title and so on. And then if you look down at the bottom, you'll see as you add more and more test items, it lists them by title and format and gives you the question wording, so you can go back and see what items that you've already put in there and maybe go back and want to re-edit another item or something like that. Or use one feature I use a lot because I want to produce a pretty large test bank is go back to a previous item and use it as the basis for a new item and just change some things around, therefore I don't have to retype the whole thing. Or I can use the same graphic in different items by just going back and reusing that, re-editing that same item. Speaking of images, that's how the image shows up in Respondus. Now there is a way to see that I'll get to in just a moment. You'll see the item itself there as you've typed it out, and you'll see whatever choices you've typed out there. So you see the whole thing in the editing window. And there is an option to randomize those choices if you want to. Now, in this particular one, I don't think I would have wanted to randomize the choices, but this, if you're going to be giving this test out to a large group of students or let students take it very many times, you'll want to randomize the choices so that if the question shows up again on a subsequent test, it's really a little bit different item because the items in there have been randomized somewhat. So the students still have to analyze each choice rather than just going back and copying a previously known item. Another thing that you see in this screen is the point value, and you can make that whatever you want, 1.5 points, 2 points, 10 points, whatever, but that's something that's programmable. And then there's the little preview button, and that's the button that's going to show you what that diagram that you put in there and what the whole thing is really going to look like to the student. So here's that preview, and now we can see the image that we had imported in, and we can see how those choices are going to read out for that particular student. Now, there are a lot of item types available, not just multiple choice. If you look over in the left-hand column there, and we'll enlarge that a little bit, we see not only is there multiple choice, but also true and false, paragraph, matching, short answer, multiple response, and actually in the newer version of Respondus, there's a couple of other additional formats. And some of you, depending on your discipline and how much writing you want the student to do, might be using those short answer items a little bit more. You can program that in to take a number of sentences or paragraphs, and you can either program it to look for certain keywords, or you can set it so that you go in and grade those by hand, meaning, go in and manually set scores and add comments and do any of those things. So really a lot of flexibility here. But looking at the multiple choice type item, what we're going to see is something like this. Now remember, the examples I'm giving here are anatomy examples, and you can probably think of a number of other kinds of ways to use multiple choice questions in your own setting in your own discipline. One other thing I want to mention is that you're not limited to just A, B, C, D, and E as you would on a scan sheet. You can go, F, G, H, I, J, K, whatever, and not have to worry about what scan form you're using, or worry about how the student is going to be able to answer that, or how you're going to have to grade that once the test has been handed in. Here's an example of the short answer style question being put in there, where I put a medical image with various things numbered, and I want the student to be able to, based on what they've learned in our course, be able to pick out something, and not only that, but spell it correctly. Now, kidney is fairly easy to spell, but as you can imagine, some of the words we get in anatomy are not so easy to spell, and so I'm really testing two things at one time. Can they spell it correctly, and can they identify it correctly? Here's an example of a multiple response item where you see there's more than one item available as a correct answer, and in order to get all the points, they have to choose all of the correct responses that are. Here's a kind of item I really love for anatomy, and my students really hate, because it really pushes them upwards in Bloom's taxonomy of critical thinking skills, because they really have to wrestle with this information to get things in the right order. And you can look and see how this would work, where they're given a mixed up list of various items, and they have to put it in the correct anatomical order as specified in the question part of the item. Another type of item that I think really gets to those critical thinking skills that my students really wrestle with, but I really love, are the little mini case studies. And this is just one of many kinds of case studies that you could set up. And so a little scenario is described, and we see whether the students can actually apply what they've learned about the content of the course and choose the correct response there. Of course, you can set up case studies also with short answer response, where they actually have to use a few or maybe even many sentences to explain what they're seeing in that particular. So once we have all of our questions constructed and edited and so on, we move to the next tab in Respondus, and what we can do with that tab is set some of the various settings on how those items are going to be presented. Now, I'm not going to go through all the options available to you. Most of them are pretty easy to figure out, but one that I really want to emphasize is this idea of question sets, because that's how we introduce this idea of randomization in a test, so that you can ensure that each student is going to be getting a different version of the test, and if you, as I do, allow my students to take more than one attempt at a test, each time they get a new attempt, it's really a different test on the same topic or set of subtopics. When we click on that question set button there, we're going to see a screen like this, where we have that list of all of the items that we had previously edited and created and so on. And what we can do is arrange them in sets. Like you'll see the first seven items here I've grouped together in a set. and I've selected that I want the student to see one of that group of seven. I could also have the program randomly select two items out of that set or three items out of that set, and then I will set how many points that item is worth. And again, that's very flexible, how many points you want each of those items that you've selected, in this case only one, to be worth. Now, after it's uploaded to WebCT, a process that comes later, well, you'll be seeing those question sets a little bit differently. And I like this particular view because I think it's a real good visual image of what I'm talking about when I say question sets. You'll see that here is that first group of seven that we were programming in the previous slide, and you can see how that's a set, but then item number two is a different set of items, and so you know, the student will get just one item out of each of those sets, or two items or three items or whatever you set it for, program it ahead of time. One of the other settings screens shows us some things that you'll want to pay attention to once you get to programming your own quiz. For example, I don't allow the question title to be shown because sometimes that actually, you know, I use titles that have to do with what subtopic they relate to, and that might actually give away the answer to the question, so that's why I don't do that. I also program it so it delivers the items one at a time, and rather than all at once, and you know, like you would on a paper test. And I do that for several reasons, among which would include the fact that many of the professional licensing tests and so on are produced this way, and I would rather my students get used to that style of testing and not get freaked out once they get to a licensing exam when the questions are only coming up one at a time. One of the other reasons why I do this is because I do put pretty simple, rather obvious questions at the beginning to kind of get them rolling, and if I do that, then that might give away the answers to some of the later questions, so I'd rather them just progress all the way through it and really, you know, get that answer before they move on. There's certainly reasons why you would want to do it a different way, but that's how I do it. Another thing that I want to emphasize here is that I do allow three attempts for each of my students. Each test may be taken up to three times, and the students soon learn that they benefit by taking it all three times, even if they do well on their first or second attempt. Not many of them do all that well on the first or second attempt, because some of them do it just, you know, without much preparation, just to see whether they can do it off the top of their head, and they soon realize they can't. And I do that because I want them to really wrestle with that information and review it and review it and review it, and this is a way to get that done. And it also removes a little bit of the fear factor that if they do mess up the first or second attempt, they still have another chance to do okay on it. Now, the randomization part of it is an important part, I think. At least I feel that is one of the unique things that you can do with online testing, and one of the things I really like about how this works as a teaching and learning tool. One of the advantages of randomization is, one of the elements of the randomization is the fact that each item may have randomized choices if it's a multiple choice item or a multiple response item, and so that increases the likelihood that if they do get that item again, they're going to have to still reprocess that information over, because it's not going to look exactly the same. Of course, another big element of the randomization is the fact that each question set may be randomized, so that you might only be pulling one or two out of that question set. Or, you know, even if you give all the items within a question set, they're not going to be presented in the same order. Each attempt by each student, therefore, is going to be a different test. And therefore, it's unpredictable. The student doesn't know what that next test is going to look like. And when you do the math on this, there are actually, you know, if you include the randomization of the different choices plus the different question sets, you end up with thousands and thousands of different combinations, even with a pretty small or moderate-sized test bank that you're starting with. So the odds that a student will get the same test twice, or any two students will get the same test, is really, really low. Yes, there are the occasional same items, but they are only occasional. And the students very quickly realize that trying to reconstruct the test from somebody else's, you know, by pasting together somebody else's previous attempts is extraordinarily time-consuming and difficult, and it's just a lot easier to take their own attempts at the test. Of course, eventually we need to get to the point where we're going to upload this into our WebCT course, and so there is a little tab for that in WebCT. So that brings us back to our third major bullet point here, and that is that the tests actually get administered in WebCT. We're creating them in Respondus, but we administer them in WebCT. And as you know, WebCT or Blackboard is an online testing platform, and you can create the test in WebCT, and some of you may already do that, but I find that Respondus is just a lot more user-friendly, and I can go much more quickly and efficiently if I start in Respondus and then upload everything into WebCT. By the way, the results of the student performance in WebCT can later be downloaded into Respondus, and those reports I find easier to read than trying to read that information within WebCT itself. Too bad WebCT didn't include that functionality in their own program. Go figure. So once you get it uploaded, then you the students have this test available to them online. So there's an item right there that the students can test. You see the little grid over to the right-hand side that shows them their progress and so on. If you've given quizzes in WebCT, you're all very familiar with that part of it. Once the student has finished their quiz, they submit it, and then they're encouraged to view the results immediately, and this gives them immediate feedback. They know right away how well or poorly that they did, and now they're all set and ready to go to start getting ready for that next attempt, because now they know how well they did on this current attempt. When they open up their previous attempt, what they will see is the grading, and it'll identify which items are correct and which items are incorrect. And you can program it so that it shows the correct item. I don't program mine that way because I want my students to go find the correct answer. And if they can't find it, to come to me and let me help them find it and show them where to look and figure out how to process that kind of a solution to the problem. So it really, I've found that a lot more students come to me for very specific help than ever came before. Previously, I'd get some students saying, "Oh, I'm having trouble. I don't know what to do," and it's kind of hard to help a student really figure out what's wrong. But in this case, we know what's wrong, and I can very specifically help them. Not only that, I think it helps the tutors over in the ACE Center and other folks that are trying to help them, because they can, really see the problem and help them work through the problem there right in front of them. The WebCT can also be programmed, and you would do this original programming in Respondus if you like. It can be set up so that it actually gives them a little bit of feedback as well. So you, if you want, show them the correct answer, and either in addition to that or alternatively, you could also program in there a sentence or two or more that says, "Okay, here's the kind of problem, here's the page number you want to look at, here's the process you use," whatever kind of feedback you want to give for that particular item could be available there. And again, that's a feature I don't use, but I could easily see it being used very successfully depending on the style of the item or the style of your course. Now, of course, a big question here is, after doing all this, is this really, getting any better learning to be happening among our students? So one of the questions to ask is, do I, as a teacher, feel like this is effective? Is this increased my perception of my own effectiveness or the effectiveness of the course? And the answer is that yes, I have found it to be an effective method. Not the only learning tool that I use and not the only teaching and learning tool that I think is effective, but it is one in my toolbox. And one of the things I've noticed is that my grades seem to improve. And I have some data to back it up. But, of course, this data has some questions related to it, and I did not do a thorough statistical evaluation of this, so I'm sure that when I compare one group of students to another group of students, that there is more than one factor that distinguishes those students. The age mix may have been different. There may have been something else I was doing differently from one course to the other, and so on. And I didn't control for any of those variables, but just shotgunning it here, this is the data I got. And this data does show a difference in two groups. I had two sets of students that I looked at using the previous paper style of testing, and two groups of students that I used using the new online version of testing, the combination of online and written exams. And if you look at the course averages, and again, you know, there's additional statistics we could look at to really, you know, back this up, but just ballparking it, it looks like my averages went up comparing the old way to the new way. And that's certainly another thing that we can look at, is what effects it has on their performance in the written test. And so I looked at the final exam scores. And my final exam scores tend to be lower than average for several reasons. One is the way my points are constructed in the course. A lot of them have already built up enough points that they either don't need any or very many in order to get an A in the course, or a B, or some other good grade. And so some of them are just kind of coming in and taking the exams and not really preparing well for the exam. And so that does kind of skew my results a little bit. But that condition existed in both the old group and the new group. So that condition remained the same. And yet, even so, the averages at least increase you know, pretty much here from one group to the other. Another thing that I noticed, both just anecdotally in class, but then I looked at the numbers and it seemed to bear up, and that is that my student retention in the course, that is how many students actually made it to the end of the class, seemed to increase. All the groups began at 225 students. They were all filled sections, and that's how many were available during those semesters. And that's how many seats were available, and they were all filled. And we see that by the end of the course, I ended up with varying numbers, but those numbers seem to be higher under this new system. So, you know, that could be a possible beneficial effect of going in this. Another thing that I notice is less class time is spent on testing. So every day that we don't have an in-class test, that's another class day we can have discussions and lectures and demonstrations and so on. And I find that kind of one-on-one interaction, face-to-face interaction with students, to be a lot more effective than me sitting at a desk making sure that they don't cheat, and them sitting at their desk keeping their eyes down so they're not suspected of cheating. I don't really see that as something that I need to be there for all the time, and not is necessarily the best use of either of our time, either mine or the student's time, in doing that. Of course, you know, I do agree in doing it sometimes, but if you can minimize that, great. Another thing I notice is that I spend less time grading tests. Now, I will warn you, there's another side to this coin, and that is getting it all ready takes a lot more time. So the total amount of time I'm spending on my course actually has increased somewhat, but the amount of time in doing the grading has decreased, and I find that I can use, I can decide during flexible times, during the summer and other down times in terms of classroom teaching, I can use that time to use flexibly to build these test banks and program these things in and do all that stuff. And I'm not really under so much time pressure as the course is unfolding to do the grading. I have much more time available to help the students work through answering their tests and solving them. Another aspect of effectiveness, of course, is, you know, do the students feel like they're doing better or worse under this system? And so, you know, looking at that from their viewpoint, I did an online survey through WebCT of 171 students at the end of the course, and it was an anonymous survey. So it being at the end of the course and it being anonymous, I hope they weren't answering in ways that they thought would influence my future decisions on how to run that course. And when we look at that data, we find that the students feel that the online approach isn't an effective approach. Here's one of the specific items I gave on that survey. I asked them, do online tests make you better prepared for the exams? And the results show that overwhelmingly, they did feel that the online tests made them better prepared for the written exams, the midterm and final exam. Another question I asked them is, do online tests help you learn the concepts of the course better? And again, there was a pretty overwhelming majority that said, yes, I do feel that this style of testing is helping me learn those concepts better than compared to the more traditional written test stuff. Another item I asked them was, do online tests help you prepare for practical exams in the lab? I was teaching them the lecture part of the course, but I was curious to see whether this had any spillover effect in the linked course, which is a lab course. And again, overwhelmingly, they said that yes, by doing this in the lecture, it seemed to help them, or they felt it was helping them perform in the practical exams in the lab. I was also curious to see how the students were actually doing the test. And so I asked them, what resources do you use while taking an online test? I do tell them that they can use virtually anything. They can even consult with other students if they like, as long as it's not the other student actually taking the test. So if they want to get opinions from their study partners or from someone else they know who they feel has a background in this field, they are welcome to do that. I feel like that's a way that they will be finding new information and learning new things when they get out there and become professionals. So this is good practice for them. So they can use their books, they can use the outlines I've prepared for them, they can use the notes that they've taken in class, they can use their they can search things online, they can go to the library, they can ask other individuals, and so on. So with that, all that being said, what do they typically do? They nearly always use their textbook, they nearly always use their outline, they nearly always use their notes, they nearly always use the printouts of their previous attempts when preparing for and have it available while they're taking that new online test. Another item I ask them is, do online tests have a high level of difficulty? I think a lot of us feel like an open book, open note, open everything in the world type test is somehow not really very rigorous and doesn't really get to the heart of their problem-solving abilities. And, I have that feeling myself, but I also have some disagreement with that approach, and my experience, I think, kind of bears that out in trying this experiment. When we look at the results here, we see that many of the students do feel like it's a high level of difficulty here. I think a lot of them are really revved up at the beginning of the course when they hear, wow, most of our tests are going to be open book, and oh man, this is great. And then they get to them and say, oh my gosh, how do you answer this? I can't find it in the book. I can't find it. Well, no, it's not written exactly that way in the book, and that's not exactly the way I presented it in class, and that's not exactly the way it came up in our discussion, but can you apply it to this new situation? And so it turns out that, I think the rigor is there, and I think we're okay engaging that textbook and engaging the notebook and so on and really getting in there and learning the material. I'm not so sure my students were really reading the book and really looking at those outlines and notes before I went in this direction. I think they said they were, but I don't know how many of them really were doing it. So we find that the students are indeed challenged by online tests. We find the students indeed spend time exploring their resources they have available, their textbooks, their course outlines, their class notes, their previous test attempts, and other resources as well. I think the students feel better prepared for the exams, and we know that feeling prepared really does have an influence on performance in a lot of cases in our written exams. Another thing that I find is that the students feel like they've learned more overall. And if they feel like they've learned more overall, I suspect they have learned more. So, some practical questions to ask ourselves if you want to try a similar experiment. One is, how do I apply this to an existing course? You can add a few online quizzes or tests if you don't have any already. You can replace some of your in-class tests with online tests if you want, instead of just supplementing with some additional online quizzes. It's up to you. Sky's the limit. Another practical question to ask yourself is, do I have an online testing platform and all the resources I need available to me? Well, the answer to at least part of that question is yes. We have on campus the WebCT, which is soon to be known as Blackboard. We have respondents available to us. Textbook publishers also often offer various test banks and so on. Most of those, by the way, can be directly loaded into Respondus. A few of them might even be able to be directly loaded into WebCT. Do I need an add-on design program? In other words, either a test design program like Respondus or other kinds of software that might help you prepare those exams. Another practical question would be, what are all the software pieces I need? Do I have an image editor? Do I need an image editor? In my department, do I have some available that maybe are not available generally to all faculty at the college? You might want to check the Teaching and Learning Center and other resources to see what it is that's available to you. We already know Respondus is available to us. And then what skills do I need? There is a learning curve with any of these things, and that's always a scary part of it, isn't it? Just like it is for our students when they start our course. Ooh, this is scary. Got to learn new stuff. And it does take some work, and it does take some time. If you're going to be using images in your tests and putting them in yourself, do you know how to do that? If not, where can you learn how to do that? Learning the testing software something I feel confident with? Do I have resources available to me to gain these skills and to support the skills and so on? And I'll answer that for you. Yes, you do. Not only do you have all of the resources associated with WebCT and that team and the distance learning group and that team and the library and that team and the Teaching and Learning Resource Center, where there's a lot available there, and all of those things, but those of us that have been doing this for a while would be happy to sit down with you one-on-one and either answer questions, walk you through problems, or maybe refer you to someone who might know the answer when we don't. So that kind of wraps up this presentation. I'm sorry it took so long, but again, you have the opportunity to stop it at any point and go back or skip over or pull out the plug on your computer or whatever. And I thank you for your attention, and I just want to emphasize again that I'm very happy to work with you, anybody, one-on-one, to help get this started, or if you're running into glitches or just want to talk things through and see how things work or don't work for me, and make your decisions for your own course based on that, you're more than welcome to do that. Just contact me any old time.